When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say the Son of Man is?" They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." "But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say I am?" Simon Peter answered, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Matthew 16:13-16. And now it's time for Who Do You Say I Am with Father Mitch Pacwa. And now, Father Pacwa.
Hi, welcome to our show. Today we're at the Nuclear Physics Lab at Loyola University in Chicago. And today we're going to talk about astronomy and astrology. To help us with the discussion, I'm going to present Dr. Jeffrey Mallow, who has a degree in astrophysics from Northwestern University and who teaches physics here at Loyola. Let me introduce you to Dr. Mallow. Dr. Mallow, welcome to our show.
Thank you, Father Pacwa.
We'd like to ask you some questions about astrology. A lot of New Age people are interested in astrology, and I'd like some of your comments on the relationship between the astrology and astronomy as a science. Do you have any comments on that?
Yes. There is no scientific basis to astrology, and it has no relationship to astronomy. Can we end the show?
No, as a matter of fact, we still got a lot more time. So, tell us why it doesn't have any relationship.
The only connection between astrology and astronomy is that both of them have something to do with the stars. Astronomy is a science, the study of that which is outside of the Earth, stars, galaxies, the universe as a whole.
Right.
As such, astronomy is based on the scientific method as a technique, mm-hmm. and it subjects itself to rigorous experimental and observational testing. That is to say, any theory that anybody proposes has to be tested by observations of stars, of galaxies, of interstellar matter, or simulations of those observations in the laboratory.
So it follows the scientific method.
Exactly.
That you have to come up with a thesis, and then you take the thesis and test it, and then have other people verify it.
Exactly.
Through
exactly.
observation.
That's right. That's
and then also it's open to other correction. But a lot of people follow astrology, which doesn't follow the scientific method.
No, astrology doesn't play by any of those rules. First of all, astrology does not subject itself to verifiable testing, and there are many studies demonstrating the falsification of astrology, and yet astrologers continue on with their theories.
Can you give us some examples? What kind of tests?
Yes, certainly. There are a number of tests. One is a test that was done by a psychologist, I think Dr. Bernard Silverman, where he asked people questions about their personal characteristics, people who knew in advance what their astrological signs were and were told by him what those characteristics should be.
Yeah.
And of course, there was tremendous correlation between what sign they were born under and what their personal characteristics were. So
right.
you'd say, well, astrology works. Well, then he did a second experiment where he did not give the astrological information and asked a group of people, a similar group, to describe themselves. And then he went and found out when their birthdays were. And there was absolutely no correlation at all between their personal characteristics and whatever sign they had been born under. Therefore, what we had here was a case of wishful thinking. When people knew in advance, they deluded themselves about what they were like.
But when they didn't know their astrological sign, it didn't work.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that you have the scientific method applied to the thesis that perhaps astrology works, but when a test case was done, it didn't work.
That's correct. Now, I'm not a psychologist, but I just gave you a good psychological experiment. Astronomically,
in terms of what we know about
the stars, astrology has no validity whatsoever, and I can give you some examples of why that must be the case.
Well, I'm a theologian. I'm not a biologian. I'm not a physiologian, so I need some help to explain to you how it works.
First of all, it's based on zodiacal signs, particular constellations which appear as the Earth moves through its orbit around the sun.
So the zodiac is a parade of animals, that's what the word means, and it refers to the constellations, which are mostly animals, except for Libra, which is scales, and we also had Gemini, which are a couple of twins, and Virgo, which is also a woman, and we also have the other animals are Capricorn. Oh, an Aquarius? That's not an animal either. That's a human being.
Before we even get to those 12 signs, let's recognize that they are one of hundreds of constellations, collections of stars, which various ancient peoples described as looking like animals, human scales, and so forth. The first thing is, of course, that different cultures describe these constellations differently.
Again, basically it was ancients doing connected dots in the sky.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the other thing is the constellations have no physical validity. All of the stars that we see appear as if they're on one large sphere to us because we cannot see how far out they are.
Right.
If we were able to see it, and we can measure it by characteristics of the stars, the color and intensity of the light they emit, we discover that these stars are at various distances, that they have no connection to each other whatsoever, the stars in a given constellation, that in fact they are moving around, and several hundred thousand years from now they'll look different, and several million or 100 million years from now they'll look completely different. There will be no Big Dipper. Therefore, the constellations on which the zodiac is based have no physical validity whatsoever. They are simply an optical illusion that we have connected the dots to.
Okay. We'll come back in just a moment, so please stay tuned. Welcome back. We see that there's some problems with the constellations and the way that they relate to us, but how many constellations are there actually?
The zodiac is always divided into 12 constellations.
Right.
But in fact, if you look carefully, there are 14. There's also Boötes and Ophiuchus. Do you know anybody who's an Ophiuchan or a Boötean?
No.
Just
so there are 14 constellations
right.
as we go around the sun.
That's right.
But the astrologers only account for 12.
That's correct. I don't know why they've left out the other two, but it's certainly damaging evidence from our point of view as scientists.
Also, something that I have read about, the Egyptians had 36 constellations because they had 36 weeks in their year, 10 days to a week. And that was different from the system that we now use, which we got from the Greeks and got from the Babylonians. And that's still different from the Chinese system, which had different constellations and different animals, which is different, again, from the Mayan system, and none of these really work together.
Therefore, one has to call the whole enterprise severely into question.
Right.
I might also say that when you argue that something has influence on you, what you're saying is it exerts some kind of force.
Right.
And it's fair to ask astrologers, as scientists, as we scientists ask ourselves, what force and where is it? Well, they like to argue the moon and the tides and so forth. That's the gravitational force.
All right, so gravity from the moon affects
so
our
they
time.
Would, and they would say, yes, it does. Mm-hmm. And they would say, well, gravity from the stars, maybe that's the force. Gravity from Mars, maybe that's the force. If there's gravitational force, doesn't it have an effect? And I would say...
And the New Age is also, just to support that we're 80% water, so it should affect us, right?
Well, let me give you two answers. One is that the reason that we have tides is because of the difference in the size of the force of the moon on one side of the Earth versus on the other side. We're not as wide as the moon, so we're not going to have that effect.
It's a matter of size.
Exactly.
If we were as big as the moon, it'd affect us in the same way, too, but we're not as big as the moon, so at least not most of us.
And we would have tides.
But we're so small that it doesn't make any difference.
It's negligible. Yeah, it's absolutely negligible. The other reason is, hey, you and I are standing on the same side of the Earth. Why doesn't the moon affect us the same way? You're going to argue because we were born under different signs? Well, that's not the moon anymore. That's all the other forces, the other planets, the stars, and so forth. And frankly, when you were born, the size of the gravitational force from those stars and planets on you were negligible compared to the size of the force from the finger of your mother's obstetrician.
So you mean that the doctor that delivered me had more influence on me in terms of gravity than did the moon? And so Dr. Norman N. Molnitz is the one I should be paying attention to rather than the various planets.
That's right. He has more effect on your life.
Yeah.
His finger should affect you more than any of the zodiacal signs. And I dare say it does.
I read that the doctor who delivered me had 186,000 times more gravitational pull on me than the moon did.
That sounds
so
about right.
So gravity doesn't really explain it at all, as far as I can
tell. No.
And then also, if it was something to do with the constellations, then it has to be gravity from the stars or something.
Exactly, and that's much too small.
Yeah.
Infinitesimally small. There is no effect to any order. The other question one might ask is, the universe began with a big bang. There was a time when there were no constellations, no stars, in fact, no matter, just energy. When did astrology begin? When did this all begin, if at one point the universe was in a little ball?
Astrology does go back as far as recorded history, at least to the Babylonians, though the earliest recorded information we have about astrology belongs to the library collected by King Ashurbanipal in Assyria. And he has some Babylonian texts there, and the Babylonian texts have some Sumerian in it, so they could go back to the Sumerians, too.
Well, people have been doing things for a long time. Some of them mature the way religion did. Religion began as a rather primitive way of pacifying some unknown gods. But religion has moved way beyond that now to where it is mature, and it asks different questions from the one that science asks. Science asks, what are the laws that govern nature's behavior? Religion asks a completely different set of questions. Why are things the way they are? And religion does not attempt to poach on science's preserve. Astrology, like other pseudosciences, want to have it both ways. They want the adherence that religion gets, but they want to use the trappings of science, the trappings of that kind of power, to acquire those adherents. And that's what I call working both sides of the street at the same time.
Now, one of the things, Dr. Mel, I also want to ask about, because it's hard for me to understand, why does the precession of the Earth affect our relationship to the constellations? What is the precession of the Earth?
The precession of the Earth, I have a little model of it here, where we actually have a geocentric universe with the sun going around to make it work. But the best way to think of it is to see that the Earth is tilted. The Earth does not go around the sun like this. It goes around the sun like this.
At an angle.
At an angle, like a top.
Right.
And you know, when you don't spin a top perfectly straight up, it makes a small precessional circle.
Right.
The Earth does that every 26,000 years. We call it precession of the equinoxes. The equinox is where the sun's orbit, the ecliptic, crosses the Earth's equator. But think of it as a top precessing. That's what it is.
Right.
Well, that's just what it's going to do. The North Star is not going to be the North Star in a certain amount of time from now. That means that all of these constellations that are sitting there are going to be shifting their positions. and we're not going to be in the houses we were some 10,000 years ago.
Well, as a matter of fact, it's already shifted. That the system that the Babylonians had invented has shifted over the last 2,000-3,000 years.
3,000
so
years?
That since the 1770s, we have precessed out 30 degrees so that we are no longer in one the sign that we say are. We're one whole sign backwards. So whenever you say that you're born in Taurus, you're actually born in Aries and so on. And that's a big change that's taken place. We're going to come back after a short break and talk a little bit more about the houses and what they mean. Welcome back. Dr. Mallow had mentioned the houses of astrology, and I'd like to talk a little bit about that before we go on in our discussion with him. He knows the part about science. I'm going to tell the pseudoscience part here. Now, in the pseudoscience, the houses are very important. What happens is this. You begin with the horizon. You look at the Earth's horizon when you're born. See, everybody is born on, with a horizon in the background of some sort. And as the horizon comes up, whatever sign your horizon is in, that sets a very important bit of information about your personality. But that doesn't end at all. You find out that sign, which is called your earth sign, I believe. Then you begin from that sign. Say you begin in Taurus, and your horizon is in Taurus. Then you also take and divide up this guy into 12 equal parts. Though some systems of the houses have unequal parts for the different houses. They don't agree among themselves about how big the houses are. Then each house has its own governing aspect of your life. So one of the houses concerns your life with your spouse. Another house concerns your children. Another house concerns your prosperity, your longevity, quality of life, and so on. There are 12 of these different aspects within each assigned to a different house. So if the horizon, when you're born, is in Taurus, then you have to move from Taurus as the first house, and then the second house is going to be Cancer, and it'll affect the qualities of the second house. Say the sign of Cancer will affect your family life. Then the house of Leo will affect your work life, and so on. And that's the way the houses work. It's confusing, but it's something that a lot of the different astrologers use within their analysis of who you are and what you're like. Now we're going to go back to studying what the science actually says about astrology and astronomy with Dr. Mallow. Dr. Mallow, let me ask you a little bit about some of the other scientific problems with astrology. Do you have any other reflections on those?
Yes, there are other branches of science which suggest that astrology is easy to debunk, and one of them is mathematics. And let me give you two arguments. If you confront astrologers with the fact that the horoscopes that they've created for various people aren't working, they'll say, well, we haven't included all of the planets, and we haven't included all of the other various factors. If we were able to include them, then we would have a full picture determining a person's life. Well, if you calculate how many of those there are, I think it's something like 60 billion possible combinations.
60 billion?
Yes.
So
that's
then
a lot of combinations.
But you know, some of the astrologers charge between $25 a session to do your chart up to $750 a session to do your chart. Maybe they've included a few more of those. I doubt 60 billion.
There's not even 60 million. Not even 60,000. It's out of the question. They would be working on one person their whole lives.
Right, right.
The other argument I'd like to make is this. In order for astrology to work, you have to have things rising and setting.
Right.
Now, we didn't ask earlier why astrology didn't work for the animals before recorded history.
Right.
But let's at least ask, can it work for all humans?
Right.
Well, for 12 million humans, we have a problem. Those that are born will live and die north of the Arctic Circle, for which stars are circumpolar. That is, they never rise and they never set.
You mean the stars up at the North Pole don't rise
or
set?
Around your head. That's why there's the land of the midnight sun up there.
So therefore it won't work?
Cannot work for them.
You can't have the houses.
12 million poor Laplanders, Norwegians, and Swedes who are wandering through life without any guide for how they should live their lives.
Also, in the last 200 years, scientists have discovered three new planets,
right.
Neptune, Uranus, and Pluto. And the astrologers don't really know how to incorporate those new planets into their system.
Well, they run into something else, the asteroid belt, which is probably the remnant of a planet which broke up between Mars and Jupiter.
Uh-huh.
Where was that, and what effect did it have before it broke up, and what effect do all these asteroids have now? What about the comets? They're part of the solar system, too, although they're pretty far out, and it's not just Halley's Comet. And what about those comets that come in and then move on a hyperbolic path and go out forever so they never return?
Mm-hmm.
How do you include those in the astrological signs?
So there's too much to include besides the fact that the system is just filled with different problems.
That's impossible.
Right.
That's impossible.
Besides the fact that the constellations aren't where they say they are, besides the fact that the constellations can't have any kind of force that influences us, and that the planets have a minimal force.
Exactly.
So that there's just a lot of things that are problematic with the whole system.
That's right.
Is what you're saying.
I mean, not to mention the whole concept of houses, which doesn't fit any scientific theory whatsoever.
Right. Dr. Mello, why do people try to make this scientific?
I think people have always been frightened. I think you can plot the rise and fall of pseudoscience by the fall and rise of people's feeling that they can control their own lives and have some control on the world around them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there have been periods where people felt that control. I think we're in a period now where people do not, where we used to feel that science was entirely benevolent and allowed us to have some control over our lives and nature, and now we feel that science perhaps has turned into runaway technology. We don't understand it. We're besieged and assailed by computers and nuclear power and so forth. We don't have an answer to pollution. So you can take one of three routes. You can go and learn science, as hard as that is, and that's what I think everybody should do.
Right.
Not just supposedly scientists, those people in a state of grace with IQs over 180 and spindly legs and big heads, but everybody. You can tune it all out. You can live nervous and just feel you have no control. Or you can opt for what, unfortunately, many people do. That is pseudoscience. You learn the magic incantation words of astronomy, mm-hmm. and you apply them to a comforting primitive dogma, astrology.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I find in the New Age movement is a lot of people are trying to find some power. Not that they want to be dictators of the world. They just want some sense of control in their lives and power. And that they frequently will turn to these various methods to get that power.
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of life is random. A lot of things are out of our control. And mature people have to live with a certain amount of risk and uncertainty in their lives.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't mean that it's easy, but it's something that we can do and
indeed,
have to learn how to do.
Yeah.
Dr. Mello, thank you very much. I'll get you back on the racquetball court. We'll see how physics works there as you hit the ball around. And thank you so much for being on my show.
Thank you, Father Paco.
And we'll see all of you next time. God bless.